Welcome to KABU, Muhammad Nabil.
It's good to be here.
Well, Muhammad holds a BAs in school counseling and psychology and Middle Eastern studies, along with a master's degree in critical theory and creative research. You're now based in Portland, and you've been involved for many years as a Palestinian rights activist, formerly with SUPR. You can tell us a little about that group in a moment, at Portland State University and at Evergreen State College. So, thanks so much for coming on to the Old Mole Variety Hour this morning and to talk about your own assessment of what's happening now with the Israelis' ongoing assaults on Gaza. And what you bring from your own life experience from Gaza. Can you start by saying a little bit about yourself and what is happening with your own family now living in Gaza?
Oh yeah, thanks very much, Janice. I appreciate you, and I appreciate to be here. Yeah, I'm from Gaza, from Palestine, from Gaza, specifically in Khan Yunis. Khan Yunis is in the south of Gaza Strip. Yeah, I arrived to the U.S. about like 10 years ago. Now I live in Portland, and throughout like the last month and a half, or like we're getting into 2 months right now, I've been watching all of the atrocities that are happening in Gaza. I've been super worried about my family, super worried about my niece and nephews. Yeah, it's been very, very hard to communicate because of the lack of the internet, the lack of actual communication during the periods of blackout. And yeah, trying to do all of that and at the same time trying to lead a life here is immobilizing at its best, but it's never compared, and it's and not compared to what's the life is happening right now in Gaza. People and my family specifically are up to like the beginning of the temporary pause that been enacted in Gaza between Hamas and the Israeli government. It's been hell on earth there. It's imagine like 45 days of constant bombardment, constant fear for your life, constant worry, constant seeking for water, food, fuel, and everything really. And at the same time, trying to know like how many of your relatives and neighbors are still alive. So it's very, very hard to describe what's going on there unless you are there, but we can only predict and try to understand from the footage and from what I hear from my family and from the news, really. And that's like the hardest part because Gaza is a blockaded strip, a blockaded area. You can't get in and you can't get out. So if even people want to go to Gaza and deliver support, food and water and medical supplies, they're not able to because Israel mentioned that like you can't deliver anything without their complete approval, otherwise they're gonna shoot it down. So that's the reality.
What do you know about and hear from your family and their community living there? Often the reports tally estimates of deaths and casualties. These are important measures, but they don't capture kind of the desperate struggle for daily survival and the chronic forms of suffering that continue, including being, as you say, terrorized by bombings, and even during this period of a pause, knowing that it's a pause and that itself can generate tremendous anxiety and suffering, even if you survive it and manage to live.
They call it a humanitarian pause. I wonder what we can call the resumption of the killing. So that's what it is. The reality is, by having this pause and putting us all in limbo and putting the Gaza people in limbo, they are stealing our future from us. and still in our presence, because like you're always thinking of the temporary, you're always thinking of like the fear, you're always having your entire what do you call it, evacuation bag. With that in Gaza, they have the, every family has like a little bag that's like in case they have to leave or their home, they got a notice that their home going to be destroyed. They have this bag that has like the basic minimum of like paper document to allow you just like to identify yourself.
And I assume parents talk with their children about these plans as well.
Oh, yes. Here's the thing that's been happening in Gaza. In regards of the children, the parents have this hard conversation with them all the time. What should you do in case one of us have been killed? And that's a very, very hard conversation if you're a parent to have with your child, especially if they are really young and they have their future ahead of them. It's very emotional to talk about it because that's been happening in Gaza since 2000, whatever, all the way up to this war. In this war, what's happening? Because like the mass number of killing, we're talking about, yeah, 15,000 people have been killed and murdered by the Israeli army, and 7,000 of them are children. So what developed this in terms of like how the parents are communicating with their children is the parents are inscribing the children names on their legs and their bodies. So in case they have a bomb or their house have been destroyed with them in it and nobody else survive in the family, the medical teams and the community members can identify who is the parents of this child and like how to identify them and to be able to take care of them in the future. So
Yeah.
that's heart-wrenching, really, because no kid should have to go through this. No parents should have to go through this. And really, to see this imagery and this story coming out of Gaza and being in the US, knowing that our tax money is paying for this,
Yeah.
is really unbearable, really, because like there's so many ways that we can support the goodness of humanity without having to spend money on war and
Yeah.
support Israeli crimes. That's one of the main things that like make the US a big part of this, because it's been over the long since October 7 up to now, and even way before, the US has been the Israeli biggest supporter. And in a way, it's not in a way, it's officially, it's like a complicit with all of the war crimes that Israel is committing.
We are talking today, on November 29th. Which is the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people that was created through the United Nations in commemorating or recognizing the Nakba. And the United Nations General Assembly President Dennis Frantz said today that the Palestinian people, as all human beings, are entitled to their fundamental and inalienable right to live in dignity with all liberties, freedom of movement, freedom from fear and from all any want, and with unfettered access to basic services. And so he calls today for solidarity with the Palestinian people in this Israeli war in Gaza. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that announcement today and whether you think it's meaningful. What does solidarity with Palestinians mean in the context of this war? And how should that be expressed other than in, rhetorical statements?
Yeah, I think the UN is take on Palestine right now is like kind of, it's more like immobilized because of how it's structured. Because so we have like all of the human resolutions, like the Palestinian resolutions from the UN that come that guarantee the Palestinian their homeland, guarantee the Palestinians
And it
the
looks
right
very
of
good when you
return.
read these documents.
Oh yeah. No, if like if you do all the UN resolutions, the Palestinian people will be happy because we are nowhere near anything. Like for example, the UN considered consider the West Bank as a state of apartheid, with all of the settlements that are happening in Jordan Valley and like creating an archipelago, if you want to say, of Palestinian territories surrounded by the Israeli settlements. And in order to go from Jerusalem to Hebron, for example, you need to go to through a checkpoint. And that's the same case if you want to go between any two cities in the West Bank. The UN consider that's illegal. And yeah, I consider that illegal. I don't think it should be. The same thing for the Gaza Strip. The UN consider the siege of Gaza since 2005 as an illegal and consider that a form of occupation because like the Israeli government has been controlling every single aspect of life inside the Gaza Strip, including movement, including food, including airspace, including anything. In order to have any meaningful life in Gaza, you have to have the Israeli stamp of approval. And that's considered occupation by the UN.
So with the United Nations General Assembly making these statements over a period of time, and it's not just left-wing or radical groups that are making these assessments of the situation, and yet the making these same statements, if you are a student activist now, Palestinian rights activist, there's tremendous censorship and repercussions to even making statements that are in the UN's own pronouncements. So what is your sense now of this movement that's in some ways the largest anti-war movement in over 20 years, and where Palestinian rights are so central now to the struggles many, particularly people of color, identify with around the world? And so it's in a way a very hopeful time, but also so horrific and depressing that it's hard to feel any kind of light on the horizon.
I mean, the feeling is true. And like, it's very hard for me as a Palestinian, as much as I'm happy to see all of this support and all of, we have not seen as much support for the Palestinian people as much as we are seeing right now. And I think that is great. But at the same time, I can't look away from the life that's been destroyed in Gaza. I mean, the Gaza City in the north and Jabalia and the Beit Hanun, all the areas in the north has been completely destroyed. The amount of people have been killed and murdered are like unbelievable and unprecedented.
Also, the West
That's
Bank, yeah, and what's happening.
yeah, and the West Bank has been basically more than 160, in the last statement, more than 160 people in the West Bank have been killed. And that's been basically more number than the combination of how many people have been killed over the last 5 years. My main question here and thing is like how many Palestinian people we need to have in order to have more support. Why don't we basically make this support more permanent and more sustainable in terms of like not having to have more atrocities in order to have the support to come. That's like, it's been a very question for me as a Palestinian, questioning both realities. Because, yeah, I am happy to see the support, but at the same time, I'm very upset and very sad about like the numbers and the loss that we are experiencing as Palestinian people. But I still have the hope because with this war, with this assault on Gaza right now, what are people seeing is something crazy, for a lack of a better word, because they are able to see this happening over 45, 50 days now, and they're able to talk about it. They're able to have conversations. They're able to have discourse, and they're able to come down and join the streets and march for Palestine, contacting their senators and representatives and on the state level and the federal level. So from that sense, I am hopeful because I don't think that that is going to go away anytime soon. And I hope that this will be like a start for a true Palestinian liberation.
Can you say a bit more there about both what you think the important demands are right now? We're here in the US, the pressure that we can exert on our own political representatives that are far to the right of the general public in this country on many issues, and including on this one. Apparently, most people in this country, according to surveys, support a ceasefire. But that's still heresy for many politicians. So there's pressure on our own government, but there's also what we would want to support over time in whatever way this war is called to some kind of conclusion.
Well, there's so many ways. So, for example, to start with, the most important demand right now is an immediate ceasefire now. And that is an ask not just like for the political far right or far left. That is an ask from every single political representative in the government, in the Congress, and for Joe Biden himself, because we have only 47 Congress members, two from the Senate, and we have Jeff Merkley here, is one of them, and we have 45 representatives. So
That are calling for a
that
ceasefire.
that's calling for ceasefire. So we need to make this number bigger, and we need to keep the pressure going, because in order to have any meaningful way to move forward, we have to have a ceasefire. We have to make sure that this is not just a pause, because we need to return the present, and we need to return the future for Gaza in order to at least
Yeah.
start breathe in order to go for what's after.
I just want to stay with that point for a moment. How do you respond to, the Biden administration and even many Democrats who say, well, a ceasefire allows Hamas to reorganize and rebuild itself militarily?
What's happening here is Hamas has been in conversation with Israel before,
Right,
and it's
quite
in
a bit, yeah.
conversation with Israel right now. How are the prisoners are being released from the Israeli prisons, and how are the Hamas hostages have been released right now? It's because there is conversations. Why are you able to have a conversation with them now and not want to have a conversation with them in the future? You've been having these conversations in the past before October 7, and they've been attacking Israel before October 7. They are there. Like, you can't just like ignore what's happening just because you are not able to eliminate them.
Yeah. And they've been abiding by the ceasefire. I know in some of the talk shows there was all of this loose talk about how Hamas would never honor a ceasefire, it would only be Israel. Obviously, they're proceeding in a very orderly way and have complied with the
They
agreements.
have been communicating, they have been cooperating, they have the demands are being sent to the US, and the hostages are being released. So if that tells us that there is a conversation and a conversation is possible, why keep killing? We don't know yet if Israel have achieved anything in Gaza according to that complies with their objectives. All what we know in Gaza right now is that 15,000 people have been killed. We have over 40,000 people have been injured. We know that half of the houses in Gaza is destroyed, and half of the population is displaced. These are what Israel is doing right now. We don't know, we don't have any evidence that Israel have been achieving any of its objectives, but all of this killing and destruction that's happening. So it's time for this destruction to end and to start to have like a meaningful ceasefire and a meaningful approach to the future for the Palestinian people's safety and for the Israeli people's safety, because nobody want to see any life to be spilled, and nobody want to see this destruction to continue.
Well, Muhammad Nabil, can you say a bit now in closing about what you'd like listeners to be aware of? There's ongoing mobilization on the streets, but also people reaching out to their representatives. And it's so important, as you've said, to keep pressure on our own government, particularly the federal government, but all our representatives to demand a ceasefire and to support Palestinians in determining their own future without the boot of Israel on their backs.
Exactly. So I encourage all the audience to read about Palestine, to read about the boycott, divestment, and sanction in order to pressure Israel to basically acknowledge the Palestinian people, and until Israel reach the demands of the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement, which is the end of the Gaza siege, the right of return for the Palestinian people, end of the occupation of the Palestinians of Palestine in the West Bank, and also have equal rights for the Palestinian people who are living in Israel right now. There's 20% of the Israeli population who are actually Palestinian, who have been there before 1948, before the establishment of the State of Israel, and release of all the Palestinian prisoners in Israel. Like, there is more than 10,000 people are imprisoned who are Palestinians in the Israeli prisons. Most of them are without even a criminal record. Or like a charge.
Another part of the story of Palestinian people under occupation and Israeli rule that you are learning more through this hostage prisoner exchange about how many young people are in jails in Israel under dubious charges or
Or
without
no charges at
formally
all.
charged. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me today on the Old Mole and for your work. And I extend my deepest heartfelt support and concern for your family and community there. I'm sure it must be so difficult, but important for them to know that you're in contact with them and working here. And there are so many others here in support of Palestinian rights to survive and thrive.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. And yeah, thank you.
Okay, take care.